Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com, and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, brain hackers. How are you? We got another Brains Behind It. I'm talking to Dr. Heather Ann Harder. She is a life coach, and she's also an author and speaker, and she's an expert that has also studied the brain and consciousness. So it's going to be kind of an interesting discussion. Stay tuned. Hey there, Heather. How are you? Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right. So, I don't know if I deserve that, but I'll definitely try to live up to it. Tell me, we were talking just off the air, and I want to keep most of the discussions kind of on the air, but you mentioned briefly that when I went into neuroscience and the brain and memory and mnemonics specifically, you study the brain and you went into consciousness. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, as you know, as you study the mechanics of the brain, you have to get into the mind functioning of the brain. And then with that, it went off into lots of different directions. I did my dissertation in nonverbal communication. I did lots and lots of trainings on communication at every level, physical and non-physical. And that led me into how we talk subconsciously through our bodies and through our gestures. And then that took me further into just how the mind communicates with each other and then the universe. And so it was really just sort of a journey of discovery.
That's fantastic. You know, when you get into that nonverbal communication, you get into really a question of who am I? Who is the person that you're referring to when you say I? You know, is it your consciousness? Is it the thought that you just had? Or what if you have like negative self-talk that you don't like? Is that you too? Or is that some other part of you? And it gets into a very existential question of what we actually are. And a lot of people don't really, you know, go down that rabbit hole, but it's an interesting thing to get into.
And even what are our thoughts? Because in my workshops, I demonstrate how we can take on the thoughts of others without realizing it, because we have never tuned into what our thoughts feel like. And so teaching people how to perceive their own thoughts and recognize that, then you know what's not your thoughts, because you can pick up, if you can be in a room of negative people and pretty soon you're feeling crabby and grumpy and all those things.
Yeah.
You're picking up those thoughts. When you live with someone, you're picking up their thoughts. So knowing what's yours is a very important starting point, because you have thoughts and feelings that aren't yours at all.
Well, and I guess a lot of people, especially parents, I would say I can relate to this, where I don't really know what I want half the time. You know, you sacrifice so much. And I think, you know, my wife would say the same thing. Everybody who's had a kid or been in a relationship, you're constantly doing things to make everybody happy. It's not that you're, you know, a doormat or anything. It's not a negative thing, but you know, when somebody asks me, you know, if I want to, you know, go out to eat and where do I want? I'm like, I have not really thought of what I wanted in weeks. Like that's not on the list of things that I think of, because I'm trying to keep this train going. I'm trying to keep a happy household and everything. What I want hasn't really even been in my thoughts. But so in a way, people would say that that's very selfish thinking, but you actually kind of argue for the opposite, that being self-centered or centering on yourself is the first thing.
There was a TV show called Samantha Who, and she woke up after being in an accident with total amnesia. So she had to rediscover who she was and what she liked. And each episode wasn't a part of that. And that's a fabulous way of living, because so much of our life is based on programming that we've received from others, and consciously and unconsciously, we're replaying tapes that our parents gave us or other people we care about gave us, good, bad, and indifferent. So literally starting every day with, what do I like? Who am I? And allowing that new expression of the best you, the divine you, to come through is very easy.
You know, that is fascinating. And also is interesting if you get into mental illness too. I had a friend of mine, a really good friend. I had him as a roommate for a while. You know, growing up, just out of high school, that sort of thing. And he, I'm not going to say his name, but I can say that he was an alcoholic. He was into heavy drug use. But he was a fun guy to be around as well. And he was really, really smart. But he had also taken advantage of a lot of people. He had stolen things, you know, and things like that. At one point, I'm not really sure how it happened, whether it was an overdose or what, but he had a swelling of the brain, and he had water on the brain, and it caused essentially the same sort of result as somebody would get with a stroke. He had huge amnesia, but his personality had also changed. He was a radically different person. He was, but the thing is, he was discovering who he was, and he was talking to a bunch of people, and all these people were saying, well, you were an a-hole is what you were. You know, you did these horrible things. You stole from your best friend and then skipped town. You did a bunch of different things. You were a horrible person. And he felt tremendous guilt for that because he did not relate to that person that everybody was telling him that he is, because
That's the exact premise of Samantha Who. She was one of the mean girls. And when she awoke, she was not that person anymore. And so it really is. And knowing that each day we wake up, we have those same opportunities of being the person we want to be.
It is really fascinating, isn't that? There's examples of people who have gotten hit on the head and they changed their sexual orientation. That's very controversial, of course, because that's believed to be, you know, genetic or something, but it has happened. There's examples of people completely changing their self-identity. Somebody gets hit on the head there's like a person in England who is compulsively painting every single day and artistically painting and everything.
Speaking different languages
and everything. Yeah. And one person got hit in the head and got an English accent, and everybody thought she was faking it and she couldn't stop it, you know? And she wasn't from England, but she couldn't get rid of it. It was, scientists have studied this extensively, and there is so much we don't know about the brain, but it is fascinating to look into that. So, but let's get back to the practical side. Let's go, you know, beyond maybe mental illness and what some people are struggling with, unfortunately. But let's get to, you know, assuming you have a healthy brain, you know, you're a healthy individual. But let's say you have, I don't know, negative self-talk or something. What would you say is your big expertise in how you help people with the experience that you've had? You do a lot of speaking. You write. What would you say? I guess the main question I'm asking is if there was one thing that you wish we could just get the word out and tell everybody is a really important principle or thing to understand, what would you think that one key, you know, thing would be?
Well, once upon a time, we didn't understand the role that cooties, the germs and bacteria, played in our lives. And when somebody suggested we wash our hands, people laughed at him because you couldn't see them. They weren't real. And so a lot of work to get them to understand that. Well, once you understand that we're part of a much bigger life force that are non-visible, then you recognize how we are interacting with this non-physical world, a la the interdimensional communication, whether we like it or not. Becoming conscious of it, becoming in control of it, allows them to discern who we want to play with and who we don't, what we want to allow them to do in our lives and what we don't want to allow them to do. You mentioned addictions. If you die with an addiction, your addiction doesn't go away. You literally still crave that addiction. So you find another person who's an addict to partake of your addiction vicariously. And that's why some people will get all really bad in their addiction without understanding why there's been the uptake. Well, it's because a bunch of dead addicts are now influencing their addiction. It's one of the reasons why the 12-step program is so powerful, because one of the steps in it is it says, this is bigger than me. I need help. And then those in the non-physical world can help, because we have to ask for help before anyone can intervene in our physical world because of the free will law of this planet.
Right. So I wanted to step in and just for people who are usually, you know, in this show and everything, we're talking to a lot of scientists and experts in the less of the consciousness or spiritual space. And I wanted to have you in to kind of show another side, that there's a lot of people who are greatly influenced by this, but there's also a lot of people who are very skeptical about this. You've had a lot of people challenge you on this, especially because you came from a scientific background and now you're you're talking about what is crazy talk to a lot of people, interdimensional communication, the spirit realm, everything. I mean, a lot of these same people, you know, also would believe in the Bible or the Torah or, you know, something like that, or they would believe in whatever their spiritual beliefs are. I've even gotten a lot of flack because I believe strongly in the law of attraction and manifesting and things like that. I can't say that I believe in everything that you're saying, but I try to keep an open mind, and I wanted to talk to you about it. But what do you say to those people?
Usually I tell them, just let's pray together and ask to know truth, because I want to know truth. And if I'm doing something or saying something that that's truth, I want it. And if they're misbelieving something, then I'm sure they want to know truth. And that usually settles them down. You know.
Well, would you say though that, and I'm not saying you in particular, but just as somebody who's representing, just for any viewers here, you know, Heather Harder, you know, kind of represents talking to, essentially, if you have a problem looking sometimes for a spiritual reason, sometimes am I catching you right? Like sometimes a problem can be in a past life or a spirit. It could be like a malevolent spirit that's affecting you or something like that. And I think what the critics would say to that is that is preying on everybody has a desire to find their problems are outside of them. You know, if I have an addiction, it's the devil made me do it type thing, you know? So what would you say to that? Is there examples that are really stark that brought you down this path? How did you get, you know, into this mindset?
Well, if people are very Bible-based, I usually go back to the Bible and say, the Bible tells us, ask and you shall receive. It doesn't say most of the time or sometimes. It says, ask and you'll get it. And so that's usually where I start with people is ask, what do you want? And once you start asking and putting that out into the universe, and one of the biggest challenges, what do you call the universe? Who is the universe? The infinite oneness, the divine, you know, that's a whole nother challenge. But once you put that out there, you will begin getting your answers. And that's where people have to trust that what they're getting is the truth.
Yeah. Well, no, and I'm right there with you with the manifesting part. I wanted to ask you about the kind of the spiritual, kind of the negative spirituality, you know, spirits attacking you, that sort of thing. How do you know? So if I'm just trying to kind of be the voice of the just kind of being objective, how do you know that a particular problem is a spiritual problem, i.e. there's some spirit that's interacting with me in a bad way versus a bad diet or education or something else? You know what I mean? How do I know that is the source?
Well, first of all, everything is a lesson, and we're on this planet just for soul growth. So if you look at every experience, good, bad, and indifferent, being a lesson, an opportunity to grow, then what's the opportunity? If it doesn't feel good, if it has a negative emotion attached to it, then it's telling you, this is keeping you from your path. Because when you're on your soul path, as you intended it to be, there is a joy there. There is a purpose. You feel a soul satisfaction.
Give me an example. If somebody, like if they're in a relationship and they're miserable, is that they're not on the right path or like, how do they know? I guess what I'm trying to say is, let's say the relationship example.
If they're in a relationship and they're miserable, the universe is telling them, you're learning a lesson here. What's the lesson? It could be mirrored back to them where they're seeing in this person things they need to look at themselves. It can be past life karma. You know, I've got to walk through this because I was a terrible person in past life. So now I've ended up with this terrible person who's treating me like I treated lots of other people. There's all kinds of reasons for it. But the emotion is what signals a lesson. The stronger the emotion, the bigger the lesson. Being aware and mindful, and as you say, in the spirit world, there's just as many jerks as there are in the physical world. Just because you die doesn't make you nice. You know, it doesn't make you wise. And so there's just as many control freaks in the dead people world as there are in the live people world.
But you're suggesting that those people are affecting us right now in real time, like that someone's having a problem. It could be that there's some malevolent experience. There's a troll. There's an internet troll, a spiritual internet troll going after you.
It can be. I'm not saying it always is, but it can
be. Okay. Well,
in my book, Interdimensional Communication, I spend a lot of time teaching people how to discern the higher sources versus any source. the Ouija board as an example, how people play with that and then get themselves into deep trouble because they're using it as a game and they're not going into it with a mindful respect of these other people's world. And once you open that door, you have given permission to all kinds of beings to come through. You know, it's like going to New York and leaving this your door open so you can make a new friend. Who walks through that door may not be somebody you want to be friends with.
So you described a kind of the, it's almost a traditional Christian idea that, you know, people who are like, I remember when I was growing up, it'd be like playing with the occult or something, you know, and people, like people were saying that, that kids who were doing Dungeons and Dragons were doing these sorts of things. There's a lot of hysteria around that, which is kind of almost kind of funny looking back on it. I know that, Rowling, who came up with Harry Potter, got a lot of flack in the beginning because they were kind of accusing her of promoting witchcraft. But I mean, all that flack actually made her a bestseller, and people, like, she was completely unknown until the Christian community tried to attack her. And now it's Harry Potter is this multi-billion dollar thing. So please, Christian community, try to attack me. I want to get rich. It's terrible.
She also got the information. She would say she'd sit on the train or she'd sit in the coffee shop and get this information. The characters came to her living.
Well, yeah. And
it wasn't just I'm going to write a story today and it's going to be about.
Well, yeah, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because some people could look at you and just dismiss outright, oh, this is hogwash, you know, because anytime people are talking about a spiritual influence. But I got to admit that I'm very existential. I very much, you know, believe in evidence that I see, but I accept a lot of evidence that I know a lot of my scientific colleagues think is utter hogwash. Like one of the biggest examples for me, and what you're talking about is the traditional Greek idea of the muse, the idea that creative people get ideas from the ether and it comes to them. I've had that before, and that was one of the inspirations behind the robot that I'm building, and I get inspiration all the time. I would be nothing without that. So there is that aspect that I feel could be a real thing, or it could be my imagination, but who cares? It works is my thinking. You know, I think faith is a useful thing to help you step into the darkness, whether or not it's true or not. If it's false, it's a very helpful lie that we tell ourselves. But the other side of the coin is there's a lot of interesting studies that have been done, remarkably underfunded by really passionate people that were really real on it, that makes me believe in something deeper. So one of the biggest examples is the sense of being stared at. I believe it's Rupert Sheldrake. He did this where he got a whole bunch of grad students to stare at the back of each other's heads. Basically, one person's facing forward and someone's staring at the back of your head. A lot of people have experienced this if they ever went to church, where you stare at somebody for a long time. You're bored to tears in church, obviously. You stare at the back of someone's head and they turn around for some reason. And the interesting thing is this actually has a history in the military, going back as far as the Romans. There's evidence that they were trained for this. We know in World War II, commandos were trained to not stare at the back of someone's head because they were more likely to turn around. And you ask yourself, why is that? And by the way, the study did show that there is a statistical higher likelihood that someone's going to be able to sense that someone can stare at the back of their head just by staring. So we have a connection just in our eyes. By me looking at you, I'm sending you a signal, or in a quantum sense, you're sensing something, or we're all part of the same cosmic being, and now your consciousness is aware of that on some level. But it's also a survival mechanism. If I have a tiger staring at the back of my head, if I am more likely to turn around and see that, then I'm more likely to survive. Therefore, evolution comes into it as a survival mechanism. Anyways, my point is, things like that are very real and very well known and fairly well documented, yet it's still considered hogwash because a whole swath of the population just wants to dismiss it as, oh, there's got to be some explanation. And I'm like, yeah, they're absolutely probably is. Let's find it. You know what I mean? But you know, I'm kind of one mind there that I do see a lot of evidence for the spiritual realm, if you would call it, or at least some realm of energy beyond what we can see. But I'm not sure if I could come as far as you have, where we give it, you know, particular names and interdimensional communication and things that I feel like that's farther. But I also know that I'm pretty far along that line where other people would call some of the things I believe in hogwash too. So I'm wondering, how do we, do you just play within kind of your sphere of people who believe in the same things you do, or do you try to reach out to the wider, let's say the more skeptic community?
I let the world reach out to me. I have told the universe in the beginning, I'll write the books, but you have to help market because I'm not my strong suit. And so it's always...
I can help you with that as a side note. We do marketing for authors. There you go. Maybe that's why I've been drawn to you.
The universe has called you in.
There you go.
But it's just really important to be open. There was, I don't know if you know Lawrence Kohlberg, but he did the research on moral development. And what he found is that human beings were divided into six categories. The interesting thing about his work is that a level three person could only be influenced by a level four. And a level four could only be influenced by a level five. If they were dealing with a level six, it was beyond their comprehension. They just wouldn't understand that. And I think that's true for most of our consciousness growth, is that everybody's where they are and influencing those people in the next step. I don't try to become an ambassador of consciousness. I do what I do. I write my books. I put them out. Those who feel compelled to read them then read in response. And those who want me to do workshops, I do it. I just answer the call.
So you're not saying that you have any special power or anything beyond most people. There's no special gifts. Like other people can listen to this in the same way you do.
Everybody has the ability to communicate. You cannot be alive if you're not communicating. It is impossible. Not everybody recognizes it. And that's what I help people do, is recognize how the doorbell rings for them, how the phone rings for them, and how to answer it, and then how to use the phone to call out. A lot of people have technology, but not everybody uses it because some people just don't like it. They don't understand it. It scares them. Well, the same thing happens when we're communicating with other dimensions. You know, it really changes our world when we recognize that we are very much interacting with all these non-physical beings. But yet you ask, and I think 2/3 of people have had some kind of UFO experience. Over half people have had some kind of ghost experience. Over half the people believe in ghosts. And yet we, as a consciousness, aren't ready to say, yeah, let's deal with them and understand their role in this game plan. Most people believe in angels, another non-physical being. I was a foster parent of teenagers for 4 years, and they're a tough crowd. I had one teenage daughter who was a goth, and she was very much into sort of pseudo devil worship and all that kind of stuff, which is a choice. Free will says you can live this life any way you want. And so we were swimming at Lake Michigan, and she literally lost her glasses in the water. And Lake Michigan is a pretty big
tunnel. Yeah, that's gone. Yeah.
And so I said, okay, I asked the angels. I said, I can't do it for you because you're over 13. You've got to ask yourself. And she's, and I said, you don't say that loud. Just in your head, ask the angels to bring your glasses.
And she's like, the angel of Marilyn Manson and Trent Reznor, please give me my glasses, right?
she never said what she did. But about 5 minutes later, this guy holds up this pair of glasses in the middle of Lake Michigan and says, anybody lose any glasses? And from that moment on, she was a believer in asking the angels for help. And so people, if they test it and try it out, you know, again, angels are safe because they're always part of that universal divine team. But instead of just wanting to connect with a UFO or an alien or whatever, which can be dangerous, stay with something safe, ask, test, and then see what you get.
All right, well, I guess I'd also keep an open mind. Yeah, you know, the where I came on this is I had a number of people be very very negative towards me. And I thought it was hilarious in the beginning because I was teaching mnemonics, you know, and visualization, you know, and everything that I was teaching had had a really good scientific basis on it. And occasionally in my lectures, I would go and just if somebody's just catching this for the first time, I'm an international bestseller. I have one of the best selling memory improvement courses in the world, Memory Made Easy. Now it's an online course, the Pharaoh Method. And, you know, a portion of this was on visualization and how to visualize things, you know, to set goals and to feel better about yourself and things like that. And I got so much flack for that. And the fascinating thing is that I've been around this for well over 20 years now. I hope I don't look it, but I do. And when I started, the current theory of the brain that we use today, which is brain plasticity, I was championing And I had neurologists and I had doctors threaten to boycott me because I was championing that theory. Because the theory of the time was tabula rasa and it was the hardwired brain. And I had people saying that I was a snake oil salesman and I was scamming people into thinking that their brain could change after 13 years old, which was the belief that it didn't change after that. And I'm like, well, from my perspective, I have a 2,000-year history that goes back to Alexander the Great and Socrates that says that it can change. Your evidence is a paltry, you know, neurology and neuroscience was very, very young. How can you make such a large claim when there's no overwhelming evidence against you? You know, and this is what I was saying as a non-scientist to the scientific community and getting a lot of flack for it. Well, lo and behold, you know, 10 years later, science changed and all of a sudden we have this brain plasticity and we have, you know, these brain training gyms and all sorts of, you know, things being marketed around there when the evidence was there all along, but the scientific community refused to see it, you know. I'll take that one step further. I suffered from a lot of health problems and I, all while growing up, you know, there was a correlation to positive thinking and health and immune response, right? And for the longest time, again, the scientific community said this is all hogwash. It's a placebo effect. It's BS. If people want to feel good about themselves, go for it. But trust in drugs. Well, you know, now we have. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. But now we have a community where, you know, the top selling drug is an antipsychotic, Abilify, and it's doing some bad things to people and not as much good things as good sleep and exercise and a better diet would. But you know, we also have undeniable proof that the immune system does listen to the brain. We have literally the alleles, the actual neurotransmitters that come from the brain go right to the immune system. We found it in the blood. We know that, you know, you're thinking positive, you send these transmitters and your immune system responds. You think negative, you're telling your immune system to stop fighting, you know? So we know now, looking back on years and years of research, for a fact, this is not conjecture. This is peer-reviewed, fully realized, not even controversial to say, if you are knowledgeable on the latest science, by the way. If you are a person who got your doctorate, say, 20 years ago, you might not be up to date, sorry to say. You got to look this up. But if you look this up now, we know for sure that positive thinking will actually do more in a lot of cases than so many other treatments, statistically speaking, over a long period of time. And when we start to measure positive thinking, measure that lifestyle, things like that, we can measure it in an immune response, especially with things like cancer and other things. It's amazing how much the brain leads the body. And I think that's just the beginning. But again, I was maybe ahead of the time or something, but there was like a good 3 or 4 things I was lecturing on that people thought was complete scams and people were trying to shut me down, you know, because of it. And as it turns out, the scientific community was just behind the wall. They were behind. So I can't really say that what you're saying is bunk. I don't necessarily believe in everything. I'm more my belief of the existential, but maybe that's why I'm talking to you. Maybe I'll change my mind at some point. I don't know. But, my belief in the universe is more energy based. You know, I do think that there is a kind of energy that lives on after we pass away. I think there is kind of a reincarnation, but I don't know if each soul is held, you know, as its own thing, you know, because I can't explain the other side of the coin. Like if my soul is my personality, let's say, right, then how come I can get a hit on the head and my personality radically changes? You know, what is my soul then? You know, what is, and then it gets into the question of who am I actually, you know? So these are just some of the questions I'm asking and I wanted to know, you know, your thoughts on that.
All right. Well, I want to jump back into the other issue you're talking about first, because you were talking about the controversy and those that attack you for your beliefs.
My bud, I should let you get a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, I taught a class in brain and learning back in the early 90s, and it was the same thing. We did a visualization of our brain.
How dare you do visualization?
And we learned about that in a university setting, but as a university professor, I could do that. But there were people who were hysterical because I was using visualization to study the mind and the mind's journey within itself. Mm-hmm. But going back then to what you said earlier, controversy makes everyone more aware. With the awareness comes, they have to choose. Do they choose this side or they choose this side? This is a free will planet. In order to have one aspect, you have to have an opposing aspect, so people are forced to choose. So in your creating controversy, you are creating awareness, and that in itself was the positive mode for people moving on to whatever they believe.
That's true. Yeah. You know, cause I have, you know, tons of emails and even letters from back in the day when I was doing this, that has changed people's lives. So yeah, probably.
I have a Southern Baptist cousin who's still praying for my soul. Now, going back to what you said about the soul personality and hitting on the head, your soul is not your personality. You have a body. Your body is not you. You are not your body. It has its own consciousness. You have a mind. It has its own consciousness. It has a purpose in your totality. The soul spirit is something else. The soul spirit creates the personality, ego, that we present to the world. The goal for us now is to learn how to work in harmony with this team. You talked about mental illness early. When you've got a mind out of control, you've got to get it back into control so that it's marching in step with your greater purpose and intention. It's why meditation is so big now. Breathing, all the different exercises that help bring the mind under we become master of the mind, and the mind no longer masters us. And
Dostoevsky.
That's a very important step. The body, you talked about the immune system and the body-mind consciousness, learning how to work in harmony with the body, and the body is the repository of all of our unresolved emotional issues. So we have to bring up our emotional issues, deal with them, so the body gets healthy. The immune system is very affected to our emotional state because it helps define it. And so it's all part of this huge interplay that's going on right now. And you're ahead of the game.
Well, so you believe in kind of the plurality of consciousness. Our consciousness, or who we say is us, is not one thing. It's many things.
You said earlier that you have several employees who work for you. Yeah. You're not your employees, but they help determine the harmony that's in your work world. So if we think in terms of our body and our mind being our employees, they work for us, they serve us. And the more we create harmony within our inner selves and allow the soul spirit to have expression, then the more we're guided by that divine force, and the more we're living that divinity, the law of attraction becomes more powerful. Our lessons become more powerful. We get a handle on life much easier.
That's fantastic. Oh, I want to make a little correction. I meant Tolstoy, not Dostoevsky. I think I spoke out of turn, but Tolstoy was the one who said, I think it was Tolstoy, it was a Russian writer who said that for the first half of our lives, we are masters of our brain, and for the second half of our lives, we're slaves to it, you know? And that was kind of that whole like building habits. So that was kind of what your comment reminded me of there. You know, it's interesting when you say it, because I've often thought of my existential being as multiple things. You know, I would talk to my body. I had a horrible pain at some points in my life, and chronic pain, and I would talk to my body to calm it down, you know, and stop a reaction in my back, for example, to calm the muscles down. I would like talk to it, you know, and I did a lot of meditation to overcome my ADD. And now I'm able to focus really, really well. But during that meditation, it was like I was talking to, I guess, that part of my brain that can't focus. And I was trying to work with it and everything. So I often saw my internal world as a party. There's a lot of people there, you know, and I haven't told that to many people. You know, a lot of people think of themselves as a singular, but I don't really know where I start and where I end, you know?
But again, look at your work world. What is your function stop and your employees start? It's blended. It's not important. Understanding that you have a team always at your disposal and learning how to use them productively. You mentioned ADD. A lot of light workers, which is what I call people who are here to help intentionally change the world, have ADD because it allows them not to take in the programming the world wants to give us. And again, as a teacher, I met a lot of children with ADD and amazing creatures because they could take in all kinds of things at their level in their way, but they didn't accept traditional teaching the same way.
Yeah. Well, I found academia was just moving so slowly. I would have like two screens with two different videos going at the same time, and I could calm down or relax because it was finally enough information going fast enough, for example. Or when I really mastered speed reading, then I could enjoy reading, because before I was going so slowly, I just couldn't pay attention. So the irony was I had to speed up. And yeah, so you do find, like with ADD, you find either, people at the top end of the genius spectrum or people who are really, really struggling. And I think it's just because that impatience, you need more information. So if you're anybody who's listening, or at least if you want a little anecdotal evidence, if you're dealing with a kid with ADD, don't slow down with them, speed up. Because that was always the mistake that teachers did with me, is they tried to slow down and it made it worse.
And doing it differently as well. We learn differently, yeah. And respecting the different learning models are very important.
And what worked for me might not work for somebody else, but it's certainly a good place to start and to think about.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we talked about kind of the skeptics out there. What would you say is something that, let's say there's somebody who aspires to something, they're longing for something, they want to achieve something in their life, or they want to have a better relationship, or they want somebody, what would you say is the role of desire? Because I know that's kind of a part of what you talk about. When you long for something, it's more than just what's inside you, right? So what would you say to people in that position?
If I were coaching someone, I would suggest they go on a verbal fast. Don't say anything to anybody for 24 hours and just listen to your thoughts. Because what happens is people have this, you talked about the dialogues within their head. They have just as much pro wanting it as they will have forces against it. You have to find out where those forces are coming against it, worthiness, capabilities, all the other things that say, oh, you can't do that. Yeah. And be able to identify and isolate and eliminate those in order to move toward the desires. What's the motivation for the desire? But they've got to get the head stuff in correctly and balanced.
And you think people are talking too much? Well, wow. No, that's interesting. I never really thought of an exercise, and I've done fasting, I've done all sorts of, spiritual paths and meditation for hours and stuff, but I never thought that is kind of an old monk type thing of taking a vow of silence. And I always wondered, why the heck would you do that? But now the way you explain it makes sense.
Well, most people are so engaged in dialoguing with everything external, they never really feel and hear their thoughts and what's going on externally. And so it's a period of not writing notes and body languaging things. It's a period of cutting yourself off from the external world so you can just focus on what are your thoughts that come up in relationship to different things. And when you do that, you begin to feel your thoughts. Again, going back to what we said earlier, you can then feel when it's not your thoughts. I'm doing a workshop next week on what's your business, because we're always engaged in other people's lives because we haven't really learned to identify our own in a very healthy way. And so that's got to be the first step.
Well, that's fascinating. I think I might even try that. I think my wife will be really happy because she'll be able to get the last word in.
Remember what Yoda said, don't try, do.
Oh, yeah. There is no try. Yeah.
There is no try.
That's fascinating. So that's an interesting thing to go from. And I always wanted to ask all those questions. I honestly think that the ideal scientific position is one of an open mind. And I think skepticism has become the lauded goal. And I think it's so easy to tear down an idea rather than be open to possibilities and just say, hey, I don't believe in that, but tell me your argument type thing. So that's why I wanted to have you here, because I wanted to, find out more and ask some questions. So going forward, what would you say is coming up in the future for you?
Oh, for me, lots more. I've got, the books are stacking up, ADD. I've got 10 books going at the same time, and that always becomes very
important. Yeah, you have a book coming out that you want to plug?
I take groups to Egypt every year because Egypt is an incredibly powerful place to learn. So I'm my book for Egypt is going to be done in a few weeks.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll talk more about it. But it's been a pleasure having you on here. It's definitely an interesting perspective and brings up a lot of really good questions. And I think the most important thing is to question everything and to be open-minded about everything. So I thank you very much for being there.
It's been my joy. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.